Coming up on KUCB News, Raven Air Group has released flight schedules through May 31st of next year, and Unalaska's City Council is set to discuss a proposed geothermal energy project tonight. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Tuesday, November 26th, 2019. An unplanned electrical outage yesterday left Unalaska without power for more than an hour and a half. According to the city's public utilities director, Dan Winters, the citywide outage was caused by a failed transfer switch just before 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
It took a while to find out where the ground fault was, because each component from the powerhouse to the ground fault has to be tested.
Power was restored around 2:30 and the failed components were replaced, but the outage marked the latest in a long string dating back to June and July. Winters says the city is still waiting on new potential transformers it ordered over the summer. They're being made to the powerhouse's specifications with thicker insulation to protect the electrical connection and minimize shortouts.
Once these potential transformers are replaced, I believe that's going to take care of the problem. We've had engineers on the issue to find out what the problem is, and we all agree that that is the issue. And as far as that issue goes, it shouldn't cause us headaches anymore.
The city has received one of its new transformers. Winter says it'll be installed as soon as the other three arrive. After weeks of uncertainty in the wake of last month's fatal plane crash, Raven Air Group has released the flight schedules between Unalaska and Anchorage through May 31st of next year and is now taking reservations. In a statement yesterday, Raven officials said the new schedule includes up to 17 flights per week, with up to 7 flights per day during the upcoming peak travel period of the winter fishing season. The airline also announced it's reserving seats for local residents, as well as offering incentives to help them earn extra points on Raven's Flyaway Rewards program. Those announcements come after community concerns about how Raven would handle the heavy winter air traffic while flying smaller, slower planes, and how the suspension of its marketing partnership with Alaska Airlines would prevent Unalaskans from booking tickets with miles. Raven continues to fly the de Havilland Dash 8 aircraft, and in its statement, the airline said it still does not have a timeline for reinstating the Saab 2000 aircraft that crashed. Neither Raven nor Alaska Airlines spokespeople have responded to KUCB's requests for further information and interviews. City Councilor Jim Fitch is resigning his seat to move to Washington State. At a busy meeting tonight, the City Council is expected to accept Fitch's resignation and begin the process for filling his vacant post. Also on the agenda is a presentation on the Unalashka Corporation's proposed geothermal energy project, as well as planning for a future city meeting with Alaska Airlines about local flight options. The City Council meets tonight at 6 o'clock at City Hall. You can also listen live here on 89.7 FM. Large snowstorms are set to hit western Alaska this week. While the storms are nothing new for this time of year, they are likely to disrupt sea ice in the region, which is forming at a much slower rate due to an abnormally warm year. KOTZ's Wesley Early has more.
By the end of November and decades past, there was a thick layer of traversable ice in the Chukchi Sea. This year, there's a lot of open water in its place. But Rick Toman with the International Arctic Research Center says that sea ice had better conditions to grow this November than in the last few years.
We've been in a comparatively cold pattern, lots of east and northeast winds, and that's allowed sea ice to grow better than we have had in several of the recent autumns.
However, large winter storms are set to hit the Chukchi and Northwest Bering Seas this week, and Toman says that means the streak of good sea ice conditions is coming to an end. Toman says that storms like these are typical for this time of year. While ice is normally strong enough to withstand them, this year's ice conditions are a little slimmer.
The ice, of course, is new, so it's relatively thin. It's not like spring ice. much more susceptible to disruption by these storms that there's nothing new in them per se, but they're acting on a lot of water instead of historically would have been over a lot of ice.
Toman says that while lower sea ice conditions pose safety and hunting risks, they can also lead to an overall temperature increase for the region. He says that Kotzebue average temperatures have risen by about 10 degrees in the last few decades.
That is tied to the, as we had in the spring, the unprecedented early loss of ice in Kotzebue Sound, and then the exceptionally warm water temperatures in the sound over the summer.
Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
Unalaska Community Broadcasting has covered local and regional news for the past 20 years. And to mark that anniversary, KUCB has been spending every Thursday of 2019 looking back at our former reporters and sharing some of their stories. However, since this Thursday is the Thanksgiving holiday, we are moving up our feature on Zoe Sobel to today. We're listening to one of her stories from 2018 when she went on a reporting trip to Attu, 75 years after Japan invaded the island during World War II.
Almost no one gets to visit Attu Island. The only way to get there is by boat. It's a long journey. The island marks the westernmost point of the United States. And navigating the governmental red tape that regulates the island is a logistical nightmare. But in the middle of a busy summer field season, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made time to ferry Attu descendants back to their ancestral home. On the RV Tekla, the main hangout is the galley.
Crystal Dushkin from Atka and descendant of Attu as well. It was something, I think, like a lot of us, something I never ever expected to happen in my lifetime, to make it all the way there.
Crystal Dushkin is the mayor of Atka. She grew up steeped in Unungan culture. She's eager to see the old village site where her great-grandmother Mary Prokopieff grew up. Had World War II not happened, she could have grown up there. But in June of 1942, the Atuans' lives were changed forever when Japanese soldiers landed on the island and captured all 44 residents. They were taken to Japan and held as prisoners of war. Nearly half of them died, many from malnutrition and starvation. In the 75 years since, anthropologist Rachel Mason says the stories of Attu haven't been shared. She explained on a break at Kiska Island.
The descendants of those people never even had a chance to learn about the experience in Japan or about Attu Village. And their parents didn't want to talk about the traumatic experience.
After the war, the U.S. government didn't allow the Attuans to return home. Mason says it was considered too inconvenient. Many settled in Atka, but others never returned to the region. A handful went to an orphanage, and some ended up in the Pacific Northwest in hospitals. That includes Teresa Deal. Raised by two white parents in Washington State, she never really learned about her birth mother's life on Attu or her captivity in Japan. But she always got questions about her background.
They think I'm Polynesian, they think I'm Mexican, they think I'm all sorts of stuff. And then they tell them, no, I'm from the Aleutian Islands, and then you get the blank stare. And so they get a lesson in geography when they meet me.
Now, this is her first time in the Aleutians, her first time being close to the history of her mom's family.
I wish I even knew more about the culture so that I can tell my sons about the culture. My sons know that they're Aleut, but they know less than I do.
A stop in Atka gives Deal a glimpse of what her life could have been like had her mom, Marina Hodiakov, grown up there after the war. From the second Deal steps on shore, the western dialect of Unungam Tenu fills the air. A brief church service is held to bless the cross bound for Attu. And over at the school, she watches students perform traditional songs.
And it was really quite eye-opening to see how the love that they have of their culture. I wasn't immersed enough. I didn't get that. So I do wish that Marina had been relocated there, and then my life would have been different, or not at all.
For the descendants, the days spent on the boat felt like a big family reunion. After 2 days of travel, it was time for the part of the trip everyone was anticipating.
We're here. We made it. We're getting ready to land on Attu. It's very exciting. If I could dance, I would totally dance right now.
The old Attu site lies in a protected cove encircled by lush green mountains. The grasses grow long and wild, interspersed with purple and yellow flowers. But there's no sign of the former village. As they take in the land, the descendants find the foundation of the old Russian Orthodox Church, plant the cross, and hold a ceremony to honor their ancestors and their lost community. From there, they gather grass for traditional baskets and other mementos to remember this once-in-a-lifetime trip. Christine Keel heads to shore. She was raised in Washington State. Her mom, Agnes Prosoff, was from Attu, but she died when Keel was 9. Keel says she grew up without any exposure to the culture. No subsistence, no traditional dance or dress, nothing. Now, she's the only one in her family to see where they come from.
And I'm bringing dirt back to my sisters. So they're going to be able to touch that to you, too.
Keel carries a big plastic bag that she's filling with sand, rocks, and other treasures of the past.
I can take that.
As she goes, she's joined by Teresa Deal, the other descendant who grew up outside Alaska. While walking the beach, they start to unpack some of the complicated emotions this trip has brought up.
Mm-hmm. Christine, what do you think about being back here?
It made me cry because, this was where my mother was born, and she's denied her life here, which would have been so much better than, a different quality of what she would have gotten, being in Washington. And
I agree, because the people that were born out here and got to stay out here, they have such a different culture, and it's like they're very proud of their culture also, whereas we just, grown up as regular Americans.
It makes me angry because...
Right, because our lives were also stolen, not just their lives.
Stolen, and I don't believe in racism or passing judgment, but it's been really hard to not be angry at the Japanese for taking her. They were just here minding their own business, living their lives.
Now, did your mom teach you that, anger at the Japanese, or just you?
No, I think it's just me. If she did teach it to me, I was too young to remember. Yeah. It's really hurtful.
Yeah.
And I know that they were just doing their job, but...
My mom, she taught me... We had to feel empathy for the Japanese internment because it was just wrong. The Japanese internment, that was even more cruel, I think, than our parents as prisoners of war.
Both of them agree that hate isn't productive. Deal says she's made a conscious choice not to hate the Japanese. Instead, she feels sad for them. For Keel, she realizes that her mixed emotions stem from loss.
There's a million thoughts going through my mind because I've wanted to step foot on this island since my mother had died, and I really feel that she died as a result of the war. She became an alcoholic, she was an anorexic, and that ultimately took her life.
But spending time with other Attuans, Keel says, is exhilarating. Deal says it'll be hard to immerse herself in the culture living outside Alaska, but she's hoping to return for a regional culture camp and learn more about her heritage. On Attu, I'm Zoe Sobel.
That was a 2018 story by Zoe Sobel, the 11th reporter in the history of Unalaska Community Broadcasting. Now she's working in Malaysia and Nepal on a Luce Scholars Fellowship. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.